This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Clap your hands and stomp your feet. You're listening to the Clap Your Hands Podcast, hosted by Elliot Shure Parks and Jack Fritz.
Wow.
We're back.
Wow.
We're back. What a day. What a day. Wow. Watershed moment yesterday. Welcome on in. It's another edition of the Clap Your Hands Podcast. Jack Fritz, Elliot Shure Parks, as always, sponsored by Coors Light.
If there's any other sign that this is the year the Sixers are going to do it, we nailed that clap virtually better than we've ever been able to do that. Yep. Every single time. So for those listening, we're doing this in different rooms. Whenever we do it, it is offbeat. It's off. That was perfect. That was on par right away. It's a good sign for the Sixers.
No, listen, when Embiid drops 50, when the Eagles pick your guy, Quinyon Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, I don't know if you heard. I don't like the pick. Yeah.
when the Phils split in the Cincinnati and Bryce is back. Like, it was a watershed moment in Philadelphia sports yesterday.
Trifecta.
Yeah. Good day to be off, but I'm not complaining, I guess. But it would be a great day.
Well, I got to hear how the speech went, by the way.
Last night was just the rehearsal. So, like, the speech well, isn't is that tonight.
What you, oh, I thought you were giving it at the rehearsal. You're giving it
no.
to me.
Okay. No.
You excited? You ready?
I went through it in my head today. I feel pretty confident right. about it. The one, I'm worried about one moment in it to where I don't know if it's going to get laughs. But I think if I sell
you
it.
You want to save it for the end? Or
I might get laughs. All right. Okay. So, Sixers, huge win last night. It was great. And Embiid drops 50. Kind of surprised he didn't get kicked out of the game. I'm glad he didn't get kicked out of the game. What was your big kind of takeaway from last night, Elliot?
So when we did the pod last time after a loss, you said you were really proud of him. And to be clear,
you gotta have a feel.
To be clear, Joel should have been kicked out of that game. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in depth. But my big picture takeaway from the game was I was proud of him, to use your word. I mean, so I'm at the draft party, obviously on air, talking about the Eagles draft, and we have the TV on watching the Sixers game. And I'm watching it, and it just looks – and it was going awful. I thought going into this game three, they would come out, they'd be fired up right away. They'd be, you know, feeling like they want to make a statement coming off of the ref stealing game two from them. And every time I looked up, they were down three, up two, down five. Like, it wasn't the statement I thought. And the other thing that I saw when watching last night was – Joel was extremely emotional to begin that game, and sometimes for the worse. So at halftime of that game, the Eagles pick is getting close. You know, I'm half watching. I rewatched a game this morning, but half watching last night, I thought to myself, this is not going well. So for them to do what they did in that second half, for Joel to drop, I think it was 18 in the third, 15 in the fourth, to carry them that way to the win, I'm not sure we've ever seen a Joel game like that in the playoffs. I know he had the game-winning shot against the Raptors, but there's been so many times, and we talk about it so often, where you can tell early on his emotion is out of control, for better or worse, and they don't recover, and they don't win that game. So I think it was, you know, it's ironic to say in the 10th year of his career and this team, you know, but...
It's really the 8th, though. I mean,
like, yeah, fair, but I thought it was a growing moment for this team. I thought it was a moment where you can look at it and go, like, that is actually a game they don't win before. The Heat game in the play-in, I think they win that game before. Last night, with as ugly as that was and with Embiid doing like the out of control thing, the fact they won that game, I was proud of Joel and I was proud of the team.
Yeah, I thought it was a legacy game. And I hope that It's and again, the way you put it is perfect from the standpoint of, I get it's eight, but this is why, and you mocked me, everyone mocked me, but I don't care. It's why I wanted a clean slate heading into the postseason, because of we can fully appreciate a game like that as we are watching this new core kind of come together and this new core figuring out how to win together. Like that's what last night was, and I'm while I'm annoyed a little bit at the Mitchell Robinson thing, it's also like I do like tough physical, like pushing guys down in the post. I just like playoff basketball like
so,
that.
Yeah,
I know you don't.
I like it. All right, go ahead.
But I just like the physical. I like that they hate each other. I want hate in sports. I know that sounds like not very 2024 right. of me, but real rivalries, like the stare down of Arcia in the Braves series. You know, I mean, I know every Eagles rivalry is completely falling apart, and no one really cares about them anymore.
Just the Niners, and that's it. Yeah,
just the Niners. But like a real, these teams don't like each other. I love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was dirty. I get it. I thought his explanation after the game was hilarious. About
it was
how
hilariously
he was trying,
bad. Yeah.
Trying to protect himself.
Yeah.
Like, okay, pal. But I like the chippiness of it. I like the chippiness of the playoff basketball.
So I don't want the Mitchell moment to overshadow the game itself, because how he played. I mean, I tweeted before the game. Last night, Joel, after game two, when he said, we're going to win the series, we're the better team, he called his shot. He said, I'm going to make this happen. And last night, he needed to be the best player in the world. And last night, he was the best player in the world. You saw why Joel, when he's at his best, there is no player in the NBA that can do what he does. Jokic is a different type of player. I don't want to get into that debate. Anthony Edwards is awesome. Joel at his best is one of the best scorers we've ever seen in the history of the game. I mean, that stretch of three straight threes was unbelievable. I mean, he scored over 30 points in the second half of a game where they had to win it. So often when talking about the Sixers and Joel, it's when's he going to step up when they need him? When are they going to have a big playoff win? Last night was what everyone has been waiting for. For Joel to do that in the second half, I think it was, like I said, the best performance he's had in the playoffs. And it just showed his skill set. When his three is falling, he is probably the most unguardable player in the history of the league, or at least certainly on that short list. And that's what you saw last night. So the Mitchell thing, we can get into that now if you want. Dude, he should have been ejected. He should have been ejected. If a player did that on the Knicks to Joel, the city would riot. I mean, after game two, with how it went with the refs and everything, I'm tweeting out the media information the Knicks are putting out there. Like, Sixers fans would have been furious. And he should have been ejected. It was a dirty play to lay on the ground and pull the guy. And I know he says that he's trying to protect himself, then roll away. And I'm in, and look, I'm not on the ground there. I can't say exactly what you should do, but ultimately he should have been ejected. So I thought it was, in a weird, twisted way, a turning moment for this team. If he gets ejected, the series and the season is over. They lose that game and they're down 3-0 and they're not coming back. And who knows? Like, maybe he gets suspended for game four. But he didn't, and he stayed in the game, and he had a career moment. So it kind of showed how much these playoffs can be so just like this close to swinging one way or the other. Because instead of talking of leading this pod and talking about Joel was too emotional, he had his game. He had his moment. But make no mistake about it, he should have been thrown out of that game.
Well, and it reminded me so much of the Nets series last year where 100%. the same kind of thing happened. And like I guess I've gotten to the point with Joel where I've just learned to live with it. Like I live with him. He's an emotional guy on the court. He obviously has scars of the past, and I think there is definitely a little bit of him that is not a lot of him, I think, is worried about the knee, and he should be. So I like the idea of kind of fighting the Knicks. I don't know. Like, I'm a sucker.
Yeah, maybe but there's a difference.
I know there's a difference. I know, and I don't think he should have done it. I mean, it is a little bit soft doing it on the ground and, like, taking his knee out. 100%. I totally agree.
Well, and for what's worth, Mitchell Robinson had a boot on after the game. Like, he really hurt Mitchell Robinson.
Right. And I think that this is just another example of New York now hating Philly athletes. I mean, this it's a little bit like, well, I want to know if you're going to get this reference, but when Utley broke Ruben Tejada's leg.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I remember.
Never.
Well, because at first people were saying Utley should have rang the bell last night, and at first I thought why, but then I remembered it was a would have been good.
And then it went out. Well, the problem is that Utley never returns from London. We've lost him to.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think he's flying back.
We've lost him to London, so yeah, it was definitely dirty. I'm glad they didn't throw him out. And frankly, had the last 2 minute report or how the last game ended, like if it goes another way, he might have been kicked out. Like I think
yeah, you wonder if they got the makeup whistle there in a weird way.
I think that's what it was. And you know, that aside, like I think we can.
Well, so actually, last comment on that. Oh, well, he should have been thrown out, and I don't think it was a smart play at all. I do like that the league leaned on letting their star stay in the game. Like Sixers yes. fandom aside, the game would have sucked and been boring for everybody if Joel gets thrown out. Now he shouldn't have done it. If I'm the Knicks, I'm furious about it. I think Mitchell Robinson has a right to be upset if he is, but just from a product standpoint, it was better Joel to get.
Well, that's what we are. We are strictly exactly. brandsmen yes, through yes. and through, through and through. I will say though. There was a video of DiVincenzo doing the exact same thing to Kelly Oubre that was floating around last night, and nothing
a fan base is better at than finding an obscure video that actually proves that the other team's point was wrong.
Well, it was like a month ago, so it wasn't like years ago. So right. Maybe calm down, Dante. Yeah. I will say, and this is not to take a shot at James Jackson, who cannot defend himself today.
No, he can't. Not here.
He's not on the podcast. Yeah, these Nova guys have been a little soft. I mean, from Brunson to DiVincenzo, a little bit of softness.
That's why it's called Temple tough, not Nova tough.
I mean, a little bit of elitism. I don't think that's a word, but elitist.
Well, and also the crying by them about like, well, when we win, we're a Nova school, we're a Philly school, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you're not a Philly school, bro. Like, I'm sorry, but like, Nova's not a Philly school.
It is what it is. Just accept who you are. Accept who you are. Mm-hmm. So, Mitchell Robinson play aside, like it happened, I get it. The fact that our guy, the big fella, said after game two, I would have liked a little bit more confidence. I would have liked, but I do buy into the theory that he was trying to protect his eye, and that's
100%. That's 100% what was happening.
100% what it was. He completely and utterly backed it up. And that matters. Like, we talk about championship medal, and we talk about does he want it? And while it might have only been a game spurt, and it might have been a short spurt of it, because he might just be too compromised to, like, make it through the series, even though last night I thought he looked pretty healthy. But for that moment, for him to say, I'm going to do it, and then actually take the damn ball and take it to the Knicks, I know that people have fatigue with this basketball team, and I get it. And it's annoying to say that at the age of 30, he's growing up.
Yeah.
But, and I made this mistake last year at game 5. I did.
Me too. Don't worry. Yeah.
I did. But that was a grow up moment from Joel. That was a grow up, like, I kind of get it now kind of performance. And I just hope that that's something we can, I don't need 50. But something that we can get going forward.
Well, so throughout Joel's career, there's been a lot of talk about whether he's tough or not. You know, is he tough in these? And obviously Joel's tough. He's had multiple foot surgeries. He's playing with Bell's palsy, which has to be absolutely terrible. Excuse me. Sorry. I know. There's mugging around it. I don't know what to tell you. I had to cough. But throughout his career, it's been, is Joel tough? And he's shown physically he is tough. But last night, I think, is what people wanted to see. I can't remember many games where Joel imposed his will on it in a playoff game like he did last night. He's had games where he's played great in the playoffs, but it hasn't felt like it has last night. And
last night felt like the regular season Joel that finally translated to the postseason.
100%. That's a perfect way to put it. Because I think in the playoffs in the past, when the Sixers have gotten punched, they have not responded to it well. Game two was a gut-wrenching punch in the face. And even the way afterwards, he's like, we're going to win the series. That was a little out of character for him. But for him then to come out, and again, the beginning was rough. And my concern with Joel is still, look, I'm an emotional guy too, so I'm not ripping him for this. But what Nick Nurse in that passage wrote is so true, that Joel feeds off emotion. And early in the game, I thought he looked out of control. But what I also thought he looked like was that he cared. and there is a difference between moping around and feeling like down for yourself. And, you know, he's playing with his knee brace and all that stuff, which we've seen before. And this feeling of like, woe is me. I mean, how many times have we watched a Sixers playoff game? And early on, because of Joel looking like he's going to quit, or James Harden when he was here, fans quit immediately. Last night, to me, felt like a different type of frustration. It wasn't a moping frustration. It wasn't a, oh my God, here we go again frustration. It was a frustration out of being overly emotional from caring. And I thought that was a positive way to channel his emotion, number one, outside of the play with Mitchell. But I thought it was a different type of Joel. Like he absolutely imposed his will in a way we do not see him do often in the playoffs. And I do think it is a growing moment to overcome the game two loss, to overcome the start of that game, to dodge a bullet by not being thrown out, and then to do what he did in the second half. We simply haven't seen that from him. So I it was awesome to see him take a punch and really fight back in a way where it showed how much he cared. And like, he wasn't going to quit. Like, this team, everyone thinks the Sixers are going to quit. Last night showed this team, at least for now, is not quitting.
Well, and he looked desperate. And
that's,
I think,
a perfect word. Yeah.
I think I've had two perfect moments.
Yeah, you're really nailed.
So
well,
far.
Look, with your speech tonight, I think that's a good sign. Yeah, your vocabulary is on point.
Yeah, that's good. But it's what makes Game 7, I think that's why there was such a reaction to Game 7 last year, because they didn't show up and they weren't desperate enough for it. And and maybe it was getting James Harden off the team. Like, maybe that, like, and we talked about this at the beginning of the year and throughout the year, like after the Harden trade, how maybe we'll get a different version of Joel because it's finally him. And it's not that in the past it wasn't Joel, but he had to cater to, okay, is Harden getting enough shots? Is Ben okay? Is
Jimmy has a dominating personality. Yeah.
Right. And for the first time, it's him. It's him. Like, at the weight of the franchise, while it's been on his shoulders, now it's squarely on his shoulders. And do you still have questions about 3-8? Of course you have questions about 3-8. They have a very good co-star with him. But what made last night, I think, such a hopeful turning point, and made last night, like, God, just win Sunday and let us have, like, let
it's
us
that
have
feeling
fun.
Of hope again. It's that feeling, to your point. Like, I thought, I felt this way about Game 5. Now, he was very good in Game 5. I don't think he was what he was last night. But you're right. Like, it's one of those games that gives you hope.
Game 5 in Boston, I thought, like, especially in
Boston. He was outstanding. Yeah.
It was in Boston. Yep. Back against the wall. And he looked like the most dominant player in the world.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, it looked like that again last night. It's just, and that's what made last year hurt so much, is that I thought the game five was like, bang, he got it, and then he regressed. Yeah. And maybe that happens again here, but I feel like this time is a little bit different.
Yeah, and so on the Bell's palsy, and I saw a tweet that the great thing about being a Sixers fan is you learn about every single muscle group in the body.
Dude, like thoracic outlet syndrome? I've never heard of that before.
So obviously I'm sure playing on a knee that was surgically repaired a few months ago has its downsides, and I'm sure that's not comfortable. I just speak from my point of view. When something is wrong on your face, I think it is a level of distracting that is not comparable to anything else. To go out there in front of millions of people in a massive game, in, you know, a prime time playoff game, and do what he did with half of his face not working, it's absurd. I mean, it is one of the best performances probably we've seen from a Philly athlete. And I just think, again, we talk about the emotion of Joel. it would be really easy for him to have quit. Like, you know, your knee's hurting, you're down 0-2, you have Bell's palsy now out of nowhere.
So I didn't really look it up. So was it caused because he got hit in the eye?
And then, all right, this is my extremely...
Yeah, put on your doctor, right, Dr. Right. Elliot.
I don't think it was caused by that. I don't believe. I think it just randomly happens. Like, he just happened to catch, Bell's palsy started.
Is it contagious?
Yeah.
Is it contagious?
I mean, if they, with the Sixers' luck, I'm sure half the team will have it within a month. But, I mean, it looks, like, terrible to deal with. Like, and yeah. Half of his... Yeah, his eyes, his mouth. I mean, it's absurd that he's doing what he's doing with that going on. Well, I'd be out of work for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, your wisdom teeth out. We heard about that.
Well, I went to work the next day.
You did. But you probably regretted that because I believe it took you longer to recover from.
Yeah, but that's what I do for the team. It's what I do for WIP.
That's exactly what you do. So, yeah, it's so funny because obviously I know that Iverson's your favorite player. And this is not to take a shot at Iverson. As you've brought many times.
Yeah.
But like, Iverson gets so much credit for, oh, he played through all this and he left it all on the line. Mm. It's interesting that Embiid doesn't.
Because like, he does the exact same thing.
He does it with probably worse. I mean, he's dealing with, again, Bell's palsy, which I didn't know what it was until last night. I thought he got poked and like his eye isn't like
right
locked back in enough. He has his like fourth knee surgery heading into the postseason. He's had two orbital bone fractures. He's played through it. Is he come up a small? Of course.
But his face really gets it tough in the playoffs.
I should actually text my brother-in-law because he's a eye doctor, and he can tell me what Bell's palsy is.
So one of my best friend's wife actually had Bell's palsy within the last year.
Really?
So I was like.
Was she able to come back and beat the Knicks in a 7-game series? Or
no? I'm not sure about this, but I actually think. Well, I don't want to get too into their personal information, but like, yeah, I mean, she handled it like a champ, and so maybe I'm a little more numb to it because I just knew someone that had it. But you're right in terms of if you've never really heard of it or known of it, hearing about Bell's palsy out of the blue is pretty wild.
Of course it is. It's been, like, and I would just love to go in and beat Ted, right? And he's sitting there. He already has the knee injury.
Yeah, exactly.
And now his eye is just like it is wandering. He's got a wandering eye. I did like that he put the sunglasses on post game. Like that's it's a good move.
Here's my thing. I think the sunglasses post game and pregame like are gonna be the image of these playoffs. Like Joel, so you know there's like playoff Jimmy and there's like face mask players where they put the face mask like sunglasses. Joel might be it. This hoodie Mello. Like there are players that are known for these type of things. I think sunglasses Joel might be the new thing.
Well, and again, that's what like there's been little moments throughout this like run that have felt different. The sunglasses on,
yep.
Him saying we're gonna come back and win. Like it's all turning into a Rocky theme.
Well,
a Rocky theme highlight package as the Sixers are finally making the run.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
At this point, should they be are you expecting them to win the series?
I am not expecting them.
They're down. What? They're still down. Like if
the series, the series odds are interesting. They're only plus 186 to win the series.
The Sixers you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it would have been like in the 250 to 300 range.
I think it was probably before this game. What one thing I think I've learned about the Knicks the more I watch them and going throughout this series. I do think they are better than people thought, but the one advantage, for as much as people talk about how tough the Knicks are and the Sixers can't keep up with them, I think what the Sixers are benefiting from is that in the past, when the Sixers have played teams where they come out and they do the like mopey, not showing up thing, they've gotten run out of the gym. I don't think the Knicks have the offense to blow the Sixers out. And, you know, knock on wood, obviously, like with game 4.
Even though they've done it a couple times this year?
Well, they did it once. They did it the one time. But in the playoffs, to me, I feel like there's been a lot of stretches where it felt like it was going to slip away. The ending of game 2, or, you know, before the catastrophe ending, but like midway through the fourth game 2, game 1, the whole game felt like the Sixers were pushing back from the Knicks' momentum. Last night, they come out, doesn't start well. And it feels like in past years, those would turn into 15, 20-point deficits for the Sixers. the Knicks just don't really have it in them to consistently be up double digits on the Sixers. I think that their lack of a pure creator besides Brunson prevents them from really going on runs. And so Brunson at 39 last night, curious how you thought he actually played. I didn't feel like he dominated the game the way 39 points would indicate, but they really only have him. So I think a positive is the Knicks are a good team for the Sixers' weaknesses in a way, because they're not able to blow them out the way other teams with better offenses are.
Yeah, I mean, they can't run away and hide. Like some teams, they can get hot and they can do. They don't really have that. Now, again, I don't want to like get too ahead of myself saying they can't score, because then they'll go out and run right. Sixers out of the gym.
Yes.
But I wonder if last night, and I had thought this after the first two games of the series, where it was, okay, they're doing a really good job on Brunson. They're shutting Brunson down. The thing that happens when you shut Brunson down and you lose is that means obviously the other guys just step up. I wonder if they made more of a concerted effort to shut everyone else down and let Brunson
beat them last night. Yeah.
We've seen, I remember distinctly the Celtics against Embiid. Like Embiid scored 52, I believe, and they almost lost because Embiid was like taking every single shot. So like I wonder if that was their adjustment, saying, okay, Brunson, let him kind of shoot all the time, and then we'll take away everyone else. Because, I mean, like, OG had his best game of the series last night. That's fine. DiVincenzo did a little bit more. Josh Hart is just – DiVincenzo did nothing, my bad. I meant Josh Hart. Josh Hart is just the new Cody Ross. Like, just like he's just – he's making – he's shooting – he was 4 of 8 last night from 3.
Right.
It's infuriating. But really, it was just those two. And then everyone else, they pretty much took out of the game. So maybe that's their kind of counter here. I thought Brunson was fine. But when you score 39, and by the way, he was plus 850 for 40. I was staring right at it.
So close.
Didn't pull the trigger, thank God. But I agree with you from the standpoint of, it wasn't a dominant performance. Mm-hmm. It was just pretty good. And I just wonder if they said, okay, let Brunson go a little bit, and then we'll take everyone else out. Unfortunately, Josh Hart still torched them.
So you talked about maybe a switch in philosophy on how they want to guard this team, let other players beat, let Brunson beat them instead of everyone else. I want to talk about Nick Nurse for a quick second. So After game one, they give up 23 offensive rebounds. And the talk is the Knicks want it more. That's why they're getting all – like, they're such a good rebounding team, which is true. They're a great rebounding team. Game two, the Sixers do a great job with offensive rebounding, outside of, unfortunately, the one at the end of the game. Last night, the Knicks, 11 offensive rebounds compared to 8 for the Sixers. I give the players credit, ultimately, because they're the ones out there doing it, and I do think offensive rebounding is an effort thing. But when's the last time in a playoff series we saw a fatal flaw in game one get corrected so quickly? I mean, Nurse clearly, and he said it after game one, that there are some things he could have done to better prepare them to be better at not allowing offensive rebounds. They've completely fixed that issue. And until the series is over, we'll knock on wood after every, you know, thing we say. But I think it's really impressive from Nick Nurse that he did that. And the other thing is last night, if we want to go back to comparing Doc and Nick Nurse, Joel had the 3 fouls and he kept him in. And I don't know if Doc would have done that. So it's only 3 playoff games, but I think you're seeing at least in games 2 and 3, the benefit of having Nick Nurse as opposed to Doc Rivers.
Well, I think Nick Nurse is a serious coach. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, I think that he's going to see how the first maybe 2 games go. Obviously he had to make the quick adjustment on the offensive rebounding. And while it was frustrating in the moment, I agree with you. You know, it has not been an issue the last 2 games. And I get, like, I didn't think he could scheme to rebound and stuff. But again, you know, I only practiced against the Division II Bloomsburg Bruins team. Right. And I got cut from other basketball teams because I couldn't pass.
So you're not the rebounding champ is what you're saying.
No. I was never I'm not a grit and grind guy. I am a 3-point shooter only. Yeah. Really. When I play. But I think that means something. I think that matters. And I think he's a serious coach that by the end you feel like he has a good feel. And that's where I think Thibodeau, I'm just not a big Thibodeau guy. I think he has his one thing, which is like defense and toughness, and hopes that their one. It reminds me a little bit of Buddy from the standpoint of like just offense, figure it out. Defense, we'll kind of grind our way through it. So I do agree with you. I think Nick Nurse, at least I've been impressed through the first, you know, this first kind of playoff run, where we talked about difference-making coach. We talked about how much of an impact can he have. Well, I think he is having an impact so far. Now, it helps that Joel had 50, you know, so.
Yeah, and often with coaching, it's the players played great, and that certainly helped.
And it's hard for me to totally evaluate because, again, like, I don't know who the third best player is.
Nothing great, I'm guessing.
Like eight. I thought it was notable, speaking of a Nurse adjustment, and I'm glad he did this. Basically just benching Buddy Hield and playing Campaign.
Yep.
Obviously.
Good call.
Obviously, I have to, well, I'm not totally gonna apologize to Campaign because I still don't totally believe it. But I think using Campaign in a home game, a home playoff game where he can feed off the crowd, do his energetic stuff. I think that's the right place to put Campaign in. I guess Campaign also on the road being an annoying little silencer could be something. He's just that kind of guy. Like, he's an all energy kind of player. Pat Bev with a shot. I always said this team would be so much better.
Yeah, we've always said since they traded for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially, Buddy Hield played 3 minutes last night. Campaign played 15.
The best player traded at the deadline?
Could be. But Campaign, at least I know he's not going to be scared. And it looks like Buddy Hield was scared. And a lot of these guys were a little bit scared. And he's not. And
Buddy's costing himself a lot of money in this series.
He is 100% costing himself a lot of money.
He's cost himself quite a bit.
But through the first two games, they're like, all right, buddy, like, yeah, you can do it. And then, bang, let's go see what Campaign does. And it might legitimately change the series.
So our stud producer today is giving us this information. I think it's actually pretty telling to your point. So Hart, OG, McBride, and Bojan during the playoffs have shot close to 47% on 62 threes, which is a ton. In the season, that group combined was 37%. So they're shooting 10% better over these first three games. That just has to fall. That has to fall down. And I think you're going to see that over the stretch. So in terms of letting Brunson beat them, I think once they shut those other guys down, you're right. They're going to really struggle to score more than they were when those guys were shooting at a way higher clip than they normally do.
Yeah, I mean, it's smart. It's smart. You let the one guy go do his thing. And if he scores, again, 40, but they're mostly mid-range and no one else can get a feel for the game besides Josh Hart, who apparently is like never going to miss again against this Sixers team.
Yeah, for real.
But it makes more sense than, okay, you're shutting down Brunson, you're cutting the head off the snake, whatever, but also he's passing it to DiVincenzo for three. He's passing it to Bogey. He's passing it to the frickin' McBride. You know what I mean? So, again, we talk about Nick Nurse. So far, offensive rebounding's been fixed. They have figured out, I think, maybe a good strategy is let Brunson cook and shut everyone else down. And he's gone to pain over Buddy, which matters because Buddy's been horrible. Like, horrible.
Yep.
So those are three things that I think just matter a ton.
And, I mean, the one thing he's stuck to, and I think he probably has to, is starting Toby. But you're right. He's shown a willingness to change his personnel, to adjust in series. And, yeah, I think he's been really good through the first three games. First game, maybe not so much, but the last two, Nurse, has been awesome.
Listen, game ones don't matter. I'm trying to tell
exactly
you that.
Exactly right. What's your confidence level they win the series?
I'm still about a six.
Like, okay, so you're over 50%.
I felt after game two more positive than I thought I was going to feel.
Yeah.
And, I mean, essentially in all three games, it's pretty much been a coin flip heading into the fourth quarter.
So and they've outscored him over three games.
Have they? Is that why you got out in front of it with your
aggregate? Yesterday? Yeah, it's a soccer thing.
Yeah. But I feel pretty good from the standpoint of I guess I worry about Embiid's health going forward. And the one thing, and now it's been a very positive podcast, but I do want to bring this up. I do want to bring it up because we are hoop heads.
We are. And we keep it real.
I just want to keep it real. He's probably not going to go 5 of 8 from three again. Like he has not been that good of a shooter.
But. Him and Maxey have both been awesome through three games.
Sure.
It wasn't like he was bad the first two and exploded for 50. I mean, I know going into the game, they were the only duo in the NBA in the top six in the playoffs, each averaging over 30. Obviously, I'm guessing that is still the case based off last night. So while the 5 for 8 thing is don't want to say fluky, but it's not something you can count on. I think they've proven that in this series, they are going to get their points.
And here's the other thing that I felt in real time while watching the game. And I actually felt this way a lot in game two as well, mm-hmm. where it seemed like they were dominating, but they weren't up by enough. And yep. and I felt that last night. I felt that in game two. It came back to bite them in game two. It did not last night. But I keep thinking they should be up by more. And because I think they've played better than the Knicks a majority of this series. Mm-hmm. It's just they have enough guys to keep it close. And the one thing I worry about the Sixers still is, do they make enough winning plays late? And we can blame the refs for game two, and we were both on the blame the refs crowd because we yes. are accurate and fair.
Fair. And not ref guys, just saying what happened, guys.
Exactly. But they also made a ton of losing plays. You mm-hmm. had Maxi fumble out of bounds. You had Lowry miss a free throw. You had Maxi blocked at the rim. You had not boxing out. You had Maxi passing to Embiid. Like, there was a lot of things that also were not winning basketball late.
Yeah.
That if you keep a team like the Knicks around, I do think they do find ways to make winning plays late.
Yeah. And I think what's been so surprising for me, going into the playoffs, I felt discouraged about this team. And the reason I feel encouraged and optimistic moving forward is, in the final 2 minutes, I agree that Maxi had the brain farts against the Knicks. But ultimately, if there's a minute to go, I think the Sixers have the two players I trust most to make a play. Like, you could argue because of the shooting, I think every shot Hart takes will go in. DiVincenzo made a big shot. But in terms of just isolation basketball, if it's game seven, 3 minutes to go, and it's tied, I think the Sixers have two players currently that I believe in, because I think they both played really well. Maxi was awesome in game two. Embiid clearly has been dominant from a scoring perspective. I just don't think the Knicks have that talent. So, look, we have to see him do it. We haven't ever seen them win a game seven, Embiid, if I'm not mistaken. It's wild. I think he's 0-3 in game sevens. But I have more faith than I did going into the playoffs that in a big-time moment that they'll step up and make the play.
Do you think they're going to win the series?
I do. I do. I think they're better. And I tweeted this, and people think I'm kidding, but I'm really not. I think you could argue that six have looked like the best team in the East so far through three games. So Boston's 1-1 with Miami. Like, Miami doesn't have Jimmy Butler. That's a really bad loss. The Sixers have been the most consistent. The Bucks were awesome in game one. The Pacers then were awesome in game two. Each were vice versa, not great in those games. I don't think anyone's going to fight me and say the Magic or the Cavs have looked great. So through the first three games in the East, I think the Sixers have the best player in the conference. You could argue they have the second best player, at least on the short list for how good he's been through three games.
The second best player in the conference, or the second best player, like second best, the best second player?
I'm saying through three games, there are not many players in the East that have been better than Maxi. Through just these three games. That, again, I'm not like,
sure,
not.
I just, yeah. Does add it, whatever. Okay, I got it.
No, but the only point I'm making is that through three games, the Sixers have looked really good. I know that they're down one, they're down. But they have played a tough Knicks team, tough for three games. Two coin flips went their way, went against them, and one didn't. Like, I don't think that because they were down 0-2, it's this team doesn't have it. I think they've looked pretty good through three games. And that's why I think they're going to win the series, because I think they've played well enough to win. I don't think it's crazy to think that they can play this style for three more wins. I mean, they have two players playing the outstanding level. They have a coach that we've shown that has shown he can make adjustments. And if you look around the East, no one's been a dominant team. So I feel pretty confident.
Which fan base do you think dreads playing the Heat more, us or the Celtics?
The Celtics. I mean, like, dude, and they don't even have Jimmy, which is wild. Has there been talks if Jimmy's going to come back at all for this series?
I would think not. I would think not. Right. But still, it's just like they're so the Heat need to be kicked out of the NBA. Like, they are too annoying. Like,
get them out.
Dude, they're just too annoying. It's like
they're they're the face of the regular season, doesn't matter, which has to kill like Adam Silver. And
I agree. So like they're just the worst. They're the worst. They're not even good. They're just really well coached and tough.
Which
and
is boring, but boring a strategy.
But they win. So a couple other things before we get on out of here. Good Oubre game last night.
Good Oubre game.
He needs Especially to stop early. Driving. Yeah. He needs to just stop driving.
And maybe he's good at the drive. I think he's good at driving.
Oh, really? Do you know what I'm talking about, or are you just talking about his?
Oh, I thought you meant to the basket. Sorry. Okay. I thought you meant he needs to stop driving to the hoop.
No, I need him to. How about this? Don't leave your apartment, pal. Like, seems like bad things happen when you leave the
Sixers
apartment.
Sixers need to get him a car. Like a driver, I mean. Like someone to come pick him up, drive him around. I think it's a worthwhile investment for the Sixers at this point.
Especially when they're paying him $20, $25 million next year.
Yeah, exactly. Again,
the story came out, and it's like, this is like the 20th weirdest Sixers story.
Well, the timing felt very 2023 Eagles, just because it was like, of course this is happening right now as they're down 0-2.
But yeah, it was unbelievable. They fought back, yeah. And Oubre was good last night, and the one thing is, and, you know, when we talk about going forward, not so much game four, but when they go back to the Garden, what role player is going to be ready to play in the Garden? Because we know that role players at home, they get the crowd bump. And maybe it is Campaign. I think Campaign is a road or home guy. Like, I think he doesn't care. I think he will just go out and be Campaign. Mm-hmm. And he might need that to steal a game up in New York, because like their role players just haven't looked ready for it. Oubre's been more like a defensive stalwart, which is not why we signed Kelly Oubre.
No.
But a lot of the bench guys obviously play better at home. They need one of those guys. Lowry's, I think, better than a role player. I mean, he's Lowry. They need someone else besides Lowry, Embiid, and Maxey to have a signature game up in New York and steal a game up there.
Yeah.
Because we know it's going to happen at home, that role players play better.
Well, and I think your point's a great one, because while, again, I have a ton of confidence in Joel and MacD to get the job done, which is a refreshing feeling to feel after how the season has gone, you're right that these teams are still close enough match that if Dante DiVincenzo makes a big three at home in game five, or if it does go seven, the Sixers are going to need probably 10 plays from role players over these next, if they get three wins, that have to go their way. And in terms of confidence of who I have to make those plays, I think Batum, I have confidence in him. I still have confidence in Oubre. And you're right, it might be Campaign. If it's game seven and there's 4 minutes to go and a role player is taking a three, Campaign is on the short list of guys I want to take, certainly more than Buddy, despite he's obviously a better shooter, Buddy is.
He puts the fear of life in,
he does.
In opposing teams. Puts the fear of life. Sunday, 1 o'clock. I mean, what are we getting the 1 o'clock draw for?
I don't love it.
Give me at least the 3:30 draw. At least the 3:30 draw.
1 o'clock feels like a loss, but I think they win.
I hope so, man. I nice rallying cry, come back from 0-2 down, getting into 2-2 before going back to the Garden.
Well, game five will be insane, too.
It's pretty poetic. Pretty poetic. So I feel pretty good about them. I'm not trying to get ahead of myself, because every time I get ahead of myself, I feel like I get let down. But if Embiid goes for 35 plus again and looks like the same Embiid, watch out. Just watch
game
out.
Over.
He looked pretty healthy last night, like all things considered.
Yeah, outside the Bell's palsy.
Yeah, well, got a text back. It can go away. Like, you know, like it's
yeah. I'd be curious if there's like a timeline. I always got the impression it was kind of, it goes away, but at any given point, like it could go away whenever. I guess your guy would.
Well, so I guess, and the way he explained it is that it self resolves itself. So
yeah, that's what I mean. You just have to wait for it to fix itself. I don't know if there's a medication.
Stinks, dude.
Yeah.
Like, can we get something shot up there in the eye?
Trust me, if there is something that they could give him, I'm sure he's getting it. So,
well, think about it this way. Like, if he would be wearing a mask. Like, he wore the freaking Phantom of the,
yeah,
whatever.
Phantom of the Process.
The Phantom of the Process mask to play. Like, this clearly is not affected by getting hit or anything.
Right.
Like, it's just, of course, something else this guy has to deal with. It's ridiculous.
It's unfair, but props him for fighting through and still having that game.
Yeah, just another day. So before we get on out of here, who do the Eagles take today?
Can I just say something? Well, all right. So I'm sorry, I don't like the pick. I don't know what people want me to do. Do they want, like, is it the second the Eagles take someone, does everyone have to rally around and be like, this is the best pick possible? Is saying that I would have taken the Alabama corners over the Toledo corner that crazy? I think Quinyon Mitchell is going to be a fine player, probably. I would have gambled on the Alabama guys. And people are so worked up about this. It's absurd. My tweet saying I don't like the pick, I said it was a fine pick. It has like 600 comments of people just furious about this. Like, I don't get it. Like, I'm sorry, I don't love the pick. What do you want me to do?
I love the Eagles. I really do. I just think the current Eagle fan is so embarrassingly, like, the green goggles that get put on. Listen, I was broke when I met Mitchell. I'm glad they took him. Like,
right.
I think if they traded up.
I said before
it,
the draft, I didn't want a corner. And then they take one, and people expect me to be like, great pick. Like, I don't like Quinyon Mitchell that much as a prospect. Now, physically, he has some tools. He seems like a great guy. I want him to do well. He's a good underdog story, which we know ties into Philly. I would have gone Kool-Aid McKinstry or Terrion Arnold.
I think that's fair. I don't know why that's.
Thank you.
Why is that so bad?
Because it's. By the way, I don't know why people love to be mean to me on Twitter. I don't know why. I try to be nice to everyone. It doesn't work.
Just letting you know, I asked you about today who they take, not last night. So it's
well,
clearly
still
on your mind
about this. Yeah. I don't care at all. But yeah.
Yeah, you're doing a great job of not caring.
Thank you. Yeah.
So who do they take today?
Dude, I don't know. I will say this, though. I think whoever they take is going to be an awesome pick. Like, I really think tonight.
What the hell does that even mean? What's the point of that sentence you just said?
Because I'm saying, I'll tell you this much. I won't
whoever
be criticizing
the
pick tonight.
Whoever they take today, I think it's going to be an awesome pick.
Exactly. I'm just going to tweet that now. Great pick by the Eagles at 50. Howie really nailed it.
Yeah.
What a home run. Can't believe he was there at 53. Could be instant impact guy. Howie season.
Once again, Howie season with the stupid sunglass and the cigarette out of his.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Dude, who could they take tonight? I can't tell if you really care or not. Do you want me to actually?
I just said shoot your shot, kid. I mean, we're a versatile podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I think they will take an offensive guard tonight. Brandon Coleman out of TCU is potentially an interesting one.
I lied. This is too much. No,
yeah,
it's
exactly. Yeah.
Just say Peyton Wilson or Jeremiah Trotter Jr.
I like Peyton Wilson.
I wonder if they – I think they trade up and go get someone. Like, use 50 and 53 and go
so
get, like,
what's interesting is they have a lot of roster spots filled already, so they might not be planning on signing a lot of UDFAs. But if they draft with all the picks they have, they're going to be at around – you like this – they're going to be at around 85 players or so, which is pretty tight on the 90. So, yeah.
It's too many. It's too
many. Exactly.
Well, it's a big weekend. It's a big weekend. Sixers, 1 o'clock on Sunday. We got Phil's all weekend long out in San Diego. Late nights for me. It means we might get a tired friend of ours.
It's a good point.
We'll see how he handles this week. And obviously, Sixers draft or Eagles draft. So, a lot going on per usual. Listen to WIP. Clap your hands. We'll be back, I assume post game on
Sunday. Yeah.
On Sunday. Dude, that's not – I'm talking like a nice little Sunday run. We've got one of the Sixers. Post game pod. Phil's Padres. Post game Phil's Padres.
Wow. Jackie's big day.
It's a big weekend. Yeah. Big speech tonight.
Tell me about it.
Well, I'm using my top 5 at 5 as my outline. And just
I think that's a great decision.
Thank you. And yeah. I think it'll make it pretty easy. So
what you should do is get up there and be like, you know, for those who don't know me, I'm Jack Fritz. So obviously you know me for the top 5 at 5.
Yeah.
So here
we
go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I already got the tip off that there's like people who are waiting to talk to me about things. Which
I'm sure.
Yeah. Like, it's like, all right, I got you.
Well, you going to go out there and talk about trading AJ, or are you off that now?
Oh, well, yeah, I guess he's going to stay.
Seems like AJ's not going anywhere.
Yeah. You swing and a miss, but it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. We keep chugging along. I can't believe they're going to pay two receivers. Whatever. We don't have to get into it.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
It's
a great move by Howie. I just think he's crushing it.
He's the greatest thing that's ever happened.
He really is. Yeah.
We'll get the statue ready now. I think they should. Do you think they should take down the Rocky statue and put a Howie statue in its place?
Howie on the phone at the draft. Just.
Yeah, because he's so good at drafting
in
this particular range. So
right.
It's definitely a good thing to trust. All right, you have a lot of drafts to get to. I got to go do high hopes and get ready for a wedding. So for Elliot Shore Parks and Jack Fritz, this has been another edition of Clap Your Hands.